This Cup of Earl Grey is brought to you by Audible.com, offering more than 150,000 titles for iPhone, iPad, and iPod, Android, Kindle, Windows Phone, plus Mac or PC. To get a free audiobook of your choice, visit audibletrial.com/trekfm.
This is Houston Huddleston from New Starship, and I'm restoring the Enterprise D bridge, and you're listening to Trek FM.
Tea, Earl Grey, hot.
Hello, everyone, and welcome. It's time for another serving of Earl Grey. I am your host, Daniel Prue, sitting in the center seat this week for our 10th episode. That's right, we are finally into double digits. And joining me, as always, are my co-hosts. We have the ship barber, Darren Moser. How's it going down there in the barbershop, Darren?
Oh, it's going very well. I have been enjoying... I'm actually an understudy of the famous barber, Mr. Mott, of the Mott's applesauce fortune, if you didn't know that. But, you know, he is just starting to entrust me with some synthetic scissors that we use down here. So hopefully by the end of this mission, I will make it all the way up to broom sweeper.
Wow.
So in the 24th century...
He's a very harsh man, okay? You just have to understand.
How many pips is that?
How many pips? We don't actually use pips. He keeps, you know, pieces of hair, and he kind of glues them. It's really kind of creepy. Actually thinking of a transfer, but...
that's pretty gross. All right, let's move on from that, because that is a little disturbing to think about. Also with us today is mission specialist, Badmiral expert... Philip Gilfus. Philip, I have a feeling we might be running into some bad rolls on this mission. Are you ready for that?
My short-range sensors are detecting a bad roll. Let's see. I got three pips. Those are the really bad rolls. The one pit mat bad rolls. They'll just like trip you. Maybe tie your shoelaces together. But a three pit bad moral, that's you're gonna just be sent into a death trap, and you're gonna have no choice for that one. So look out for everyone. Keep those invisible seatbelts strapped in.
Now I'm curious, Philip, what sound klaxon goes off when a bad moral approaches?
Well, this is a family show, Darren, so I can't actually play that alarm. But I'll be happy to play it during our after hours Earl Grey decaf edition.
There you go. It's very urgent. I'll take it.
Yes.
Well, we'll have to look out for that. Well, as you may or may not have realized, this is actually going to be Earl Grey's first foray into episode commentary. And as we have been commenting on a few of the recent episodes, I'm a huge fan of Ensign Row. And since I'm in the center seat this week, we're going to do Ensign Row, the episode. We are going to commentate on the episode of Ensign Row called Ensign Row, moving on from that. So everybody get ready, queue up your Netflix or your DVD or however you consume your Star Trek media. I don't know, maybe you have VHS tapes or Betamax or whatever you have. And I'm going to give you a countdown and we're all going to start from there.
And if you're lucky enough, maybe you're listening to this right when the season 5 Blu-ray has been released and you could be watching this on Blu-ray.
That's true. You could be watching from the future, as these podcasts will not disintegrate over the next 5 months.
That's right. That's right. All right, everyone. Press play in 3, 2, 1, and go. All right, guys. So obviously we start out here with Mott, right? This is the first appearance of Mott, I believe. And how do we feel about Mott? Do you guys like Mott? Are you Mott fans?
I think this is an interesting take. This makes you question, though. Like, who would choose to be a barber on the Enterprise? Like, your life's ambition, you're like, I'm not really an action person. I don't know if I want to join Starfleet. I'm not really an engineer, but how could I get into space? Barber. That's it.
Well, you have to think, right? Okay. So you have to, let's assume that Mott is Starfleet's best barber, as Riker says in the episode, and he's hit a peak in his career. Maybe he's on, Bolia.
Widow's Peak.
Bolia, is that where they're from? I don't know. Wherever his planet is, or Earth, or wherever he's from, and he's hit. He is the man to go to for a haircut, but eventually you can't go any higher than that. So, what is your next career move? Oh, space. That's your next career move. So it makes logical sense.
That's right.
I'm just throwing this out in the background. I'm pretty sure that was a Vulcan, but it sure looked like a Romulan sitting behind him. I think the makeup department was getting a little sloppy right there with the background characters.
Well, maybe
it was that crewman's grandfather.
Oh, that's
Drumhead.
Right.
Oh, there you go.
And maybe Mott is so concerned with hair that he's completely oblivious that one of his assistants is a Romulan spy. He doesn't even bother like putting on the makeup anymore.
he's just been talking him to death.
He has the Roddenberry philosophy of he doesn't see people. He just sees their hair. All people are equal.
He just
in Mott's barbershop.
Maybe like Daniel, you know, Romulan is in this year in Starfleet and Federation. You know, everyone's getting the shoulder pads and their off-duty uniforms and all that, going for the bold Beatles haircut, you know.
I was going to say,
that
maybe
reminds me of a comic I once read where they had a Klingon fashion designer. And basically, it's like, who on the Clone World decides what the Klingons wear? This year, more belts and sashes. That's last year was, you know, shoulder pads and, you know, cranial ridges. I think that would be a great episode in future Trek.
Yeah, for a long time, cranial ridges were out. That was considered
they
very
were.
Unfashionable.
They were so faux pas.
It was more of the wet look and, you know, all that stuff.
The 22nd century, right? That's what it was?
Yeah.
The whole 22nd century. No ridges. Just.
So did we not actually have to talk about Ensign Row until she shows up on screen?
Yeah, I don't think it's necessary.
I think that seems to be the way we're going.
Right.
You take a drink every time she appears.
Or every time we actually talk about the episode that's carrying on the screen right now.
Right now, there's a ship moving through space, exploring space, on a continuing mission.
So people feel this, you know, listening to some other Star Trek podcasts, and people kind of feel like the TNG opening here is the dullest. Do you guys feel that way? I mean, I guess it kind of, well, I guess, I don't know. How do you guys feel about that?
Well, I consider some other Star Trek series to have much duller openings. At least here there's a ship moving as opposed to something standing still for the whole time that the music is going. But anyway, I won't name names.
But I guess the idea is that TNG didn't even come up with its own opening. It just stole TOS's
opening.
They
basically took the TOS one and swapped out the Enterprise for the Enterprise,
right,
and pumped up the music a bit. Well, they did have some of those stars flying by it, and apparently were in the solar system? I don't know. Saturn looks it looks pretty cool.
It's classic now, though. That's what I like it because it's classic, and I still get pumped up when I'm listening to the music. I'm like, yeah, I'm about to watch TNG, man. I'm excited about it. But.
Yeah, we always pump our fist in the air. TNG, yeah!
So here we have some recycled footage, which TNG rarely does. Oh, no. That's a joke. It's all
so,
the time.
So
no,
right now we're
never.
Seeing space dock, and the Enterprise is going to fit perfectly into those little
look
doors,
at
that.
Right? Oh, you can already tell it's not going to fit. Oh, my God.
No, that's not even let's not even go there. This isn't Transformers. You can't mass shift just to make it work. I'm sorry.
Is it the TARDIS, maybe? Is the space dock? Is it
no.
bigger on the inside?
Well, this must be Earth, because I'm pretty sure that's freaking Earth's moon in the background. I mean, I could take another blue planet with a starbase, but it's got a moon. And I could see Armstrong City from here.
So we have
I was going to say, I like how Jean-Luc always tries to butter up the Badmirals. Not that we know he's a Badmiral yet, but spoiler alert.
He's an admiral on the Enterprise, given Picard flack. He's a Badmiral.
Are there good Mirals? Like, can you give me an example of a good Mirral? Like somebody who's nice?
There's a few.
Like.
There's the Admiral from Drumhead who stops the investigation.
Oh, yep. Mm-hmm.
There's the Admiral in Wolf 359 who dies on his flagship. He kind of had Picard's back the whole time. The one who kind of shoved Selby down his throat, but in the end, like, he made some good calls.
He didn't even want to play poker.
Yeah,
though.
And he still had an eye for the ladies, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, he was real creepy about Shelby, wasn't he?
He gave Riker fantasies. Command of the Enterprise.
What does that mean? Could you please clarify that? That's true. He gave Riker, you know, the Enterprise.
That's true. That's right.
And he gave them that fourth pip. And, you know, if Riker had been in command any longer, he may have popped the question to Troy, as we talked about last week.
That's right.
But then he got demoted, Jean-Luc came back, and then, like, Riker hid the ring, and, yeah, so.
Hid the pip.
No, O'Brien stole the pip. That's what happened to the pip.
Oh, yes.
Oh, you're not using this anymore? I'll just take that.
This is, if you haven't picked up, this is not an episodic-based podcast. You need to watch it in order to get our references, as our characters will grow from episode to episode.
Just like TNG.
Now, you can tell he's not... You can tell this admiral isn't, like, way up there because he doesn't have a belt. He doesn't have the belt of, you know, leadership.
Right.
So he's kind of free-flowing.
So there's the big joke on Trek FM, on the Ready Room specifically, about how, you know, the admirals seem to have their own fashion design. Like, they get to pick their uniform. So, but they always seem to have this gold trim, which I think is pretty cool. Like, I like his uniform. I think it's pretty snazzy.
Yeah, well, I just
in a
just, you know,
kind of
become an admiral.
Way.
It's like Star Trek Online. You just make your own uniform.
So okay, so here let's actually bring it back to the episode for people that are actually watching the episode. Here we go. We're getting the introduction to the character of Rolaren through this conversation, and I think it's kind of bogus.
Take a drink.
I think it's kind of bogus that everybody like she's this infamous. She's just an ensign. She botched up one away mission, which you have to assume happens all the time, and. She's like, she's notorious.
People died, Daniel. People died, and they had names, okay, and families.
I just assume that this kind of thing happens all the time. Like, okay, first of all, if you're putting an ensign in command of your away mission, maybe that's bound to happen, but...
Well, it's like Voyager. Everyone kind of knew who Tom Paris was, or, you know, when the
you
first officer
Licarno?
And the doctor were kind of glaring at glaring at him. Yes. He changed his name as an alias. Well, sticking to the episode, one thing, you know, is that this is the first Bajoran mention here in Star Trek, and they actually make that distinction where they, in this one scene between the Badmiral and Picard, they refer to them as Bajora and Bajoran. So I don't know, we talked about that maybe the difference between a Bajoran and a Bajora is the number of nose ridges, maybe. We're not sure, but
it's how they conjugate the verb, don't you know? Like, if, depending on, you know, if you were, which continent you were in when you were learning about Bajora, or maybe it's like one of those plural things where it's got the little bracket around the N, you know, like the bracket around the S.
So we have this scene.
It's kind of weird to see, you know, Ensign Row with that little lone ensign pip. It's just like, it's all kind of almost weird to see someone having that just one pip there.
Yeah, well, I remember hearing, I don't know.
There goes the earring.
Yeah, there goes the earring. I think it was Rick Berman or whoever was in charge at the time. Maybe it was Brandon Braga, but they were justifying never promoting Harry Kim, and they said that every show has to have its ensign. But TNG lost its ensign in season four, whenever Wesley left the show. Mm-hmm. And
Mr.
we never
Crusher.
Had him. So it was weird. We never really had a full-time ensign. So it was, you're right, it is kind of strange because we don't often get major characters who are that low rank in TNG.
Although we're going to have to discuss at some point, you know, Geordi LaForge's rise of power, because he goes from like lieutenant junior grade to like... Lieutenant commander in a matter of years. Like, it is crazy how
fast he gets
promoted.
Yeah, no, it's true.
Oh, what?
Yeah. So, okay.
Well, you know, never mind.
just bringing it back to this episode again, this scene kind of shows why I like Ensign Row so much. And again, I'm not going to harp too
much. Just your stance.
I'm not going to harp too much on Deep Space Nine right now, but... I did say before that I think that Ensign Row should have been the Kira role. Obviously, that's what they're making her for. But I think she's a stronger character. I really do. Like, in the first time we see Kira, she's throwing a 6-year-old temper tantrum, and maybe people find that endearing. Maybe people like that part of her. I don't. I think it's obnoxious. I think you if you don't get your way, you don't get to just throw things around. But here we have someone who is. Kind of bucking authority and is kind of trying to go against the grain, but she does it in a way that shows that she has some sort of depth of character. Like, I think that, you know, she's not as aggressive as Kira is, especially early on, and I think that's one of the reasons I like her so much.
She's despondent.
Well,
and
this scene is so great because, like, she knows. Right now, basically, she's the smartest person in the room. She knows more than Picard on how to, like, pronounce Bajoran names and all these ins and outs. So, and she doesn't mind telling people, you know, what's going on. But I have to admit, this scene is the first that drew it to my attention. Who put her uniform together? Because that is the largest collar I have ever seen on an ensign. It's like they wanted to showcase that she only had one pip, and so they made a disproportionate collar to show this tiny dot on it. It's huge. It's bigger than Commander Riker's, and he won't even put four pips on his.
Well, maybe, and I don't want to cast any aspersions, but maybe, you know, Michelle Forbes came in, had a hickey, and they're like, oh, how are we going to cover that up? We got to make the collar bigger. So, you know, that's just a theory. I mean, you know, Troy can never have a hickey because look at that uniform. There's no collar at all.
Yeah, there's barely a uniform.
She started getting hickeys after she started putting on the uniform.
Yeah, once Jellicoe was like, okay, getting uniform, she was like, yes, finally, freedom.
All the hickeys in the world.
I love Ensign Row. I love this episode. I think it's really good, and it's interesting because when I picked this episode, it was just because I wanted to talk about Ensign Row. But it's really interesting how much this sets up Deep Space Nine, and honestly, even Voyager to an extent, because we get this conflict between the Bajorans and the Cardassians, which sets up the Maquis as well. This is kind of the genesis for all of the 90s Trek that we get. And it's
yeah, the Maquis become a very central thread through all three of their starts.
Right, yeah, exactly. Right. I thought you were going a different place. I thought you were going to say they become a very central thread to Voyager after the first episode when they completely drop it.
Well, no, but into the setting up of the premise, yes, and yes. Getting, you know, I mean, they could have just said, here's a Starfleet crew and they're heading to the second star and boop, oh, now they're in the Delta Quadrant. Like, at least they tried to, like, spice it up a little bit, you know, for the pilot.
So did it feel good for the second star straight until morning? Is that where they're going to be?
Oh, boy.
Yes, but,
well,
yes,
one thing
yes.
I want to talk about is with the Bajorans, you know, obviously, look, Deep Space Nine and Voyager and everything else, here we are in where we are now in Star Trek. But, you know, this is the first time the Bajorans were set up. And just briefly, you know, here we see the Way team kind of into this Bajoran refugee colony. But, like, the Bajorans are an interesting concept to me because it's very much modern day and also in our own history here in the world of a people who are being persecuted, and here you had the Federation who knew about this occupation and this persecution, but, you know, for whatever reason, to keep the peace, quote-unquote, decided not to intervene. You know, whether you want to use the Holocaust example or whatever, a modern example, you know, where we know people are being hurt by another government, but we choose not to act for one reason or another. But here we have the Bajorans, and what that means. How does the morality of the Federation recognized here? And here you have Picard, you know, oh, you don't meet with the guy who's all popular with the Bajorans, does all the fleshy press conferences. You meet with the real people, and they may be people who have their hands dirty, who may have done bad things. And so, I mean, there's so many modern applications to, you know, who the Bajorans can represent in our own time. So, but I think it's interesting where we look at the Federation having this moralistic stand, and how do they treat the Bajorans, and how do they deal with them?
I think she has an awesome jacket.
she also has an awesome jacket.
And I mentioned this once
before.
Not
to diminish anything you said there, Philip.
And I mentioned this once before.
Just
I'll,
looking
I'll,
at her arms.
Yeah. Yes, look at her arms. And I'll do it again, but TNG majorly underrepresents the sciences division. All we ever get is Crusher and then Troy in the last season and a half.
It's red and gold every beam. Red and gold.
Everyone. You look on the bridge, there's no blue on the bridge. It's all red and gold. And it's like, what the heck, man? I always, that's one thing that always irritated me. Deep Space Nine had two. Voyager had, I guess Voyager only had one as well.
Voyager didn't have any blue on the bridge.
None on the bridge. No, you're right. That's
right.
What I mean. Only one.
They could find it holographically.
How they did, yeah.
Like, he couldn't even leave a room. They like demoted him into
except
his cell.
Except for Ensign Wildman.
But I do think. But I think even more so than Voyager, TNG, even like the minor bit, like the minor characters, like we don't even see that many just random blue shirts walking around. Like, who do we get? Like Dr. Salar. That, you know, that's it.
Maybe they're off in their, you know, science labs doing important research, and everyone else walking around's busy taking care of the ship and other stuff.
We do get Commander Darren.
Well, speaking of shirts, so we had this thing of where Ro took off, you know, her Starfleet top for the first time ever. We have no idea how the zipper, you put that thing back on. But she's wearing.
I believe
sort
they
of...
made a separate suit for that shot. Alone. I don't believe there was a zipper there to begin with.
Do you just Superman it when you're in Starfleet? Could you take it off? And, but like right now, she's wearing this sort of red. You know, I guess I was going to say over. It's actually under. You know, undershirt or whatever. But it almost looks like it's silk or whatever. And I'm wondering, is Jean-Luc wearing that same thing underneath his uniform? And does Data and Worf have yellow or gold ones underneath their uniforms? It's very
well, and Picard's a sleeveless, just like hers. Underwear. I mean, it must be.
No, the only thing that Picard has under his uniform is his bathing suit from Risa. That's all he's wearing under there.
Captain's you know, holiday.
That shimmery, really cool-looking underwear.
Yeah, there's a lot of silk in the TNG. Like, if you see Picard's, you know, very little pajamas that he wears, his little silk robe that, like, goes 1 inch below his hip or something, and and all of the pajamas he seems to wear, they're just silk and very comfortable and nice. It's nice to know comfort's a big thing in the 24th century. And they're
although
not
to draw the... To draw that parallel again, though, between Ro and Kira, I mean, she also had a jacket kind of top that she could take off. And I have to say, though, I think the costume department did a better job in DS9 with hers. Was kind of the little kind of etching along the top. And it looked less like, oh, this is a uniform, and more just like, this is my personal choice for what I have to wear, like, under my uniform.
Welcome to Star Trek. Who wore it better?
Yeah, we won't get into that because it's not even a contest. But okay, so here we go. Here's an interesting scene.
Yes.
Because we get the genesis of the, and it's not like a huge thread through TNG, but we get to see Ro and Guinan. And honestly, I'm of the opinion that any episode, any scene that Guinan is in, is instantly better. Like, she elevates,
like Generations. Oh. Wait.
Well, I do like how Bev and Troy went to go meet Ro. Like, we're the welcoming the new female committee, because we're the only token females here on the crew.
Yep.
Once again, Ogawa gets the shaft.
That's right. Nurse Ogawa. Oh, man. Well, that's a whole... We're going to have, next week, character profile, Nurse Ogawa. That's not true. But,
actually, that's not true. But okay.
I thought we were gonna profile Andrew before we did it. Nurse Ogawa. Oh, we're not? Okay, never mind.
No. But this is a relationship that is actually brought up again. For those people who like to criticize TNG of not having these through lines or following up on anything that they do, this is kind of a central point to the episode Rascals, which I think we all enjoy.
Guinan and Ro, yeah.
Guinan and Ro, like Guinan again doing what she's doing here, you know, trying to teach Ro to loosen up, you know, have fun, you know, talk to people. Interact, have friends, make friends, and...
Well, they knew if they put Guinan and Ro together, they would grow.
Oh, I see what you did there. That was clever. I'll give you that one. But
hashtag.
Yeah,
no, please no hashtag. Please no hashtag.
But yeah, it. I mean, the parallels between their two, I mean, not childhoods, but at least lives, is, you know, Guinan... her people with the Borg and destroying her society and then being scattered. Then you have the Bajorans, same thing, being occupied by the Cardassians and their culture being scattered. And so that's sort of their things that they have in common there. And she's, I guess, looking out for one of her own.
Yeah. What do you think she's drinking there? It looks like Kool-Aid to me. I don't know if you guys
saw. Oh, she's
it
drinking
not.
The Kool-Aid.
Doesn't matter. It's in a futuristic glass, so it must be... It must be, you know, Syntha Kool-Aid.
But I do love
kind of the real stuff.
I love when
none of the sugar effects.
Yeah, exactly.
No, you don't get a buzz.
We give that to children. Here, have your Syntha Kool-Aid. They'll still be sleeping fine tonight.
Syntha Kool-Aid. Does that mean there's like Syntha candy and like, I don't know, is that a thing?
Yeah, the kids still get the little red mustache from drinking it, but you don't get any of the hyperactive.
The replicator effect, makes so. Sure they get five a day.
I mean, really, kids can have Syntha Hall, right? But, all right, we won't get into that. That's a separate thing. But I do want to mention that I love this. I love the moment that we just passed where Guinan is talking to racist Geordi about Ro and. You know, and And Geordi's like telling her, oh, well, she got these people killed. And, you know, no Starfleet officer should want to be around her. And Guinan is like, well, it sounds like someone I'd like to know, which I think just speaks to the depth.
That's so Guinan.
Yeah, such a great Guinan line and a real aspect of her character.
Well, in the scene, the part we just passed, you know, I often wonder, is there a switchboard somewhere on the Enterprise? Because some sort of Starfleet signal comes in and they put the call in and say, Ensign Roe, there's a communication for you. And she just kind of pauses and she's like, thanks. And if I was on the other end, I'd be like, so do you want me to take a message, route this to your comm badge, or make a telegram? Like, come on, give me something, honey. You know,
look at this.
I picture someone like Pulaski with like the earphone and like the really old switchboard in front of her, you know, but modernized, you know.
I like this away team here because Picard was so jealous of Ro taking off her uniform. He's like, I'm switching to the jacket. See, I have a fancy undershirt too. Mine's blue though.
His closet's all, you know, the regular jumpsuit and then the one jacket. And he's like, today, this is a jacket day.
He wakes himself up, looks at the morning report. You know what? It's a jacket day. It's time to be the captain. Other times he's like, I don't feel like putting on two different pieces of cloth. I'm just doing the one. Ugh.
And in that transporter scene, we had six officers. Six. And none of them were wearing blue. It's absolutely ridiculous. It's absolutely ridiculous.
Yeah. Well, and that's
why Picard is technically wearing blue. He's got the blue undershirt.
It's kind of gray. I consider it gray.
It's a shade.
But, you know, imagine if Ensign Roe hadn't beamed down before them. Then I don't think they would have all fit on the same transporter pad. And what would we have done? We would have had to take turns.
Stood in the middle. Could have stood in the middle. Used the power beam.
That's true.
In the middle.
They do use the middle a little bit. But that's like the odd one. Like, oh, you don't get the, you know, your little own hexagon. You have to stand in the middle. We've lost our signal bars. Data lost his bars.
Data lost his bars. So this is the big reveal of the episode, where we find out the terrorist that we have been searching, you know.
Actually, we find out that Starfleet has no tactics when beaming down into a situation where they don't know what's going on.
They're freedom fighters, Daniel. Freedom fighters.
You have a Klingon, you have an android, and you have the most sophisticated piece of technology orbiting the planet, you know, in the world. And you have handheld scanning devices that could tell you how many people are there.
Phantom of the Opera.
Yeah.
Yes.
And you get ambushed in a cave by these yokels who can't even leave orbit. So it is pretty sad that their tactics are that off.
Oh goodness.
So we find out right here is that the Bajorans weren't the ones. They weren't the terrorists that attacked the Federation, right? But who could it have been?
Who was it? Mystery.
Although I really like this, you know, not just the makeup on Orta, but also his little voice box. I think that extra detail where it kind of lights up more LEDs as he gets louder, and it's not just a single blinky light. You know, that's a great prop.
Right.
I'd wear
which
that
I
on
think
Halloween.
This is a great message. You know, don't smoke, kids. This is what it leads to.
That would have been really funny if we walked in with
I can see the crossover. I've seen the Star Trek Reed poster. Now we just need the Orta Don't Smoke poster.
That would have been great if he walked in with a voice box and, hello, Picard, you know. That would have been pretty funny. But unfortunately, we didn't get the no smoking episode in TNG, did we? We did get a no drugs episode.
We got the no drugs. Yeah, we got the Yar speech to Wesley.
Yes, which was absolutely ridiculous, but so here we go.
Why? Are you pro-drug, Daniel? Are you saying we should promote drugs?
Look at this.
Hey, I'm just saying,
forget the commentary.
Wesley was one of the only ones who didn't partake in the game.
That's right.
Pretty much a drug that the whole ship got infected with, so I think he's doing a pretty good job.
Including the captain. Maybe it was the speech by Yar that scared him straight. Maybe she was like the original scared straight. That's what it was.
Oh, man.
So five people just got off the turbo lift, none of them wearing blue. Okay, yeah, that's the last I'm going to mention it, but I just...
I think I wouldn't really want to be that crowded in a turbo lift with Worf, I'm just saying.
He's a big dude.
I don't think it would have been a pleasant trip.
He doesn't like bathing. Yeah, that's true.
Right now, Picard is telling Ensign Roe, don't ever disobey my orders again.
Right.
And then she slinks out to do 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 do.
So she's a very sad Ensign Rover.
So she wants to go ice skating, is what you're saying.
She has to go to the psychiatrist, right? That's what she's about to do.
Man, she really wants to jump on that bed. You can tell. Oh, she just wants to jump up and down on that bed so
she's
much.
A jumper.
Oh, boy. Okay.
Well, she's laying on the bed. So
okay,
she's halfway
okay.
there.
Yes, you're right. But so Guinan's in here now. And
I heard you got grounded, see?
So this is interesting, right? Let's talk about Guinan and Ro again, because that seems appropriate. This is like we get this scene later on in Rascals, just like we're mentioning, like the jumping on the bed scene. It's interesting, I think, and it's smart of the writers to put Guinan on Ro's side, because we'll see in a minute when they go back up to the ready room, and Guinan's the only one on that ship that could have turned Picard, I think, at that moment. Maybe Riker, if he really had a good point, but I think then Picard would have just been like, "Oh, you just want her. That's why you're defending her." But I think Guinan is the only one that can
foreshadowing.
Yeah, exactly. Guinan is the only one that can give legitimacy to Ro to Picard right now, because in his eyes, she's committed treason. She's withheld information. She's
again.
Again, yeah.
Again.
And it's so powerful that all she has to say to Picard is, "She's my friend." And then walk out of the room. And Picard's like, okay, I'll give her another shot.
I mean, Starfleet has pretty much a three strikes policy. So she only has one more chance left at this point.
Unless you're Nick Locarno.
Then it's off to New Zealand. And you don't want that.
And you have to have a name change. And then you get put on a really tiny ship. Yeah.
And your dad will change appearance more than once. So it's not good.
I mean, like I said, I really do think that Guinan.
I always like.
Go ahead.
Is this Ensign Ro before or after Mark Twain? Because I've been watched an episode in my third season.
I'm pretty sure
re-watched.
This is pre Time Zero.
No, nope. It's
yeah
it's
okay.
After.
It's Time Zero. Thank you.
It's after
because
it's after. Okay.
Was it after? Because I think Guinan was telling someone in an episode, you know, I'm really attracted to bald men because the bald man saved my, you know, was really good, you know, saved my life when I needed it. And then right here she's telling Ensign Ro, you know, he really was there when I needed him. And it's always been like this mystery, like, what was this time? And then it's Time's Arrow of she was hurting a lot and Picard stayed with her.
Yeah.
So, which I don't know if I know this isn't what Time's Arrow, but that was kind of a disappointing scene. Well, I won't talk about the episode, but it was like, oh, we built this up so much, and then we saw it, and it was like, oh, well, it was just that. Okay.
I lied, actually.
But anyway.
Darren, you were right, Darren. I want to apologize. Darren was right. It was the – Time's Arrow is the end of this season, so this actually takes place pre-Time's Arrow. And this isn't the Time's Arrow podcast, so I'm not going to comment too much on it, but I can't stand those episodes. They really irritate me. I don't like them at all. But you're right. And I always thought, not to bring it too far off of Star Trek, but I think that Guinan and Picard have a very Doctor Who and his wife. What's
companion?
Her name? His wife, the one that she goes backwards in time and he goes forwards in time.
Oh, I know. Yeah. Yes. Keep going. Keep talking.
Anyways, it always
River Song. Sorry,
River Song. River thank Song. You. Yes. Once that started happening in Doctor Who, it reminded me very much of the Picard Guinan thing. Like, oh, we've done things that I can't tell you about yet, and I always thought that was
spoilers.
Interesting. Spoilers, right? Yeah.
We have the big reveal of Ro saying she's secretly working for the Badmiral to set up the. You know, give weapons and keep the peace with the Cardassians and all that stuff.
Yeah, and okay, so this irritates
me.
Picard
is aghast.
He is, as he should be, right?
Shocked.
And it always irritates me about these admirals that they have zero oversight. Like, in my mind, Starfleet's a massive organization, right? Like, huge. And I'm thinking that there
like
are probably. There are probably hundreds of admirals. I think. That's how, in my mind, that's what
Dan,
I think.
Are you somehow saying that one admiral couldn't create the biggest ship known to Starfleet and hide it in the solar system without anyone knowing else in Starfleet? Is that what you're trying to say? That sounds like that would be a crazy thing if that happened.
Whilst keeping a model of it on his desk. Oh, hey, that's interesting design. Why haven't we done that before? No, don't worry about it. It's Legos. Don't worry about it. Yeah, no. No, it makes no sense to me. Like, okay, let's not get into darkness. That's not where we're going.
Let's talk about everything but this episode. No. Yeah, no, it's good. Revealing yourself to Picard.
Yes, and I do have this problem that this admiral has this amount of oversight and this amount of authority to be like, I'm going to send someone on a secret mission. Nobody's apparently checking up on what I'm doing. It doesn't matter. I can do whatever I want because as soon as you reach admiral, that's it. Every ship is under your command. Mm-hmm. I don't know. You're in the military. Is that how things work? Like, as soon as you reach a certain rank, you're in charge of everybody below you, and you can tell them to do whatever you want?
Well, he's the only admiral in the sector, in the quadrant. There's no other admirals around.
Yeah, I don't buy that.
Uh-huh. No, no. Oh, man. Well, I think also it seems like in TNG, not all of them, but it seems for the most part that the Badmirals are all connected to the Cardassians, because you have this one, you have Admiral Nechayev, and they're all about doing these kind of, you know, bad things, or quote-unquote bad things, all to keep the peace with the Cardassians. That's the most important thing. You know, the means justify the ends of keeping peace with the Cardassians. And so I always find that there's a common thread here these latter seasons of TNG with the Bad
And that's
world.
Interesting, because maybe what it is that Starfleet realizes, or the Federation realizes, how terrible that peace treaty that they signed was, because all it ever did was come back to haunt them, and really it didn't give you that much peace, and it was still this kind of Cold War scenario, and like, you like displaced millions of your own people to sign this treaty. Maybe they realize how terrible it was, so they're like kind of going out of their way to, I don't know. It just irritates me, because I get sick that every admiral we see is a bad guy. I love that in Enterprise that we get Admiral Forrest, and he's a good guy the whole time.
Oh, yeah.
I think that's wonderful. We never got that in TNG, and I wish... It's fine if you have every now and again, fine. You want to cause internal conflict, that's okay. But, like, I think it's one of the things that Enterprise does really well. It's like, no, these admirals are going to be your advocates. They're going to be the in-between guys between the people in the field and, you know, the guys back at home. So that's why I like Admiral Forrest so much, and I wish TNG had their version of that.
Yes, the admirals certainly set up a lot of character conflict in Next Generation, so it's definitely something that you would notice when you watch this series. But
yeah,
I mean, one thing about the Cardassians... I would definitely say that. One thing about the Cardassians, I think it's an interesting alien species for TNG, because they're not the bad guy enemy, because we're at peace with them. They're not the Romulans, who've always been the bad guys. They're not the Klingon bad guys.
It's kind of a tolerant peace, you know.
Yeah, it's
I
sort
mean,
of this
we don't
tenuous...
Really...
They're not our... I mean, we're peace, so they're kind of our allies, but not really. We're suspicious. And I think that's sort of an interesting dynamic to have with an alien species, that they're not the enemy, but they're always kind of the suspicious, you don't know what's going on with them, but we still have to be nice with them.
I love the Cardassians.
Our first shot of Ensign Ro at the helm.
That's right, which where she should have been every episode after this, but unfortunately she wasn't.
I have to say, I love Picard's plan. Like, it's such a great plan. Like,
the double bluff.
Well, and that's the great thing. Like, it's very much his style. I mean, you have Kirk. I mean, the way Kirk or Janeway or Sisko would have handled this situation is probably all different. But I just love Picard's way the best.
It's he always has. He keeps that, you know, card in his pocket. It's like with the Vector having the Klingons cloaked there the whole time and being like. Well,
and continuity wise, I love how the Bajoran transport is the same model they use in Deep Space Nine whenever they have like a Bajoran transport show up. It looks like kind of that triangular shape, and you know, I mean, I know that these were all kind of shot relatively close to each other if you think about it, you know, from Deep Space Nine to this season, but still it's those little details that are nice, you know, in Star Trek.
Yeah, and like we've been talking about, obviously this sets up the Cardassian Bajoran conflict that we see all throughout Deep Space Nine. And I'm with you guys. I like the Cardassians as the bad guys, because they're interesting, because they're very sinister, and they're very manipulative and backstabbing. They're a lot like the Romulans in that way, but they're much more upfront. I don't know. I really enjoy the Cardassians, and we don't get to see them much on TNG. Like what, 3-4 episodes, maybe. But you could tell that they kind of hit the ground running with them. Like, they had a good idea for what they wanted, except for, like, those stupid helmets that they wore in the first episode.
And their weird split mustaches that some of them wore.
And then they have we're about to see in, like, 10 seconds here, they still have that kind of weird-looking armor here before they go to the cool-looking metal one here.
Yes, and they're more flesh-colored than white.
Yeah.
Like, in Deep Space Nine.
It's true. Their armor was BA in Deep Space Nine.
Yeah, it was.
Yeah. Now, not here. Yeah, there we go. We've got a Cardassian here. Now, I was about to say they don't have the neck that we usually see, but maybe they're just different races of Cardassians. This is sort of the thin neck.
You see a little bit of it, but it's definitely not as pronounced.
And not the Cardassians.
Oh, gosh.
But you're right. The Cardassia, which I'll call them, are a little more like hairy. And then the Cardassians, a little more dark hair and big neck. And you know.
Scaly. Yeah, well, I agree with you, though, Darren. I do love that Picard has this really smart plan. We'll give him exactly what he wants. You know what I mean? And
I love this. I love this scene because it's so. It tells us how Picard deals with the Romulans, where he has this. You know, we're gonna say in the most polite language possible that we both hate your guts, but we're gonna say in the most polite way, like we're friends here, aren't we? So what are you doing? This is what we're doing. We'd request that you withdraw. I understand your request. We also request this. And it's like, we just hate fire weapons.
He does that in the other Cardassian episode, too, right at the end, where he's like, just so you know, we're watching you, or whatever. Like, go home and tell with the whole...
The one with Gul Dukat's twin brother?
Yes.
Yeah. Well, you know... And when he gives him, like, that ultimatum for an hour, I'm just really glad it's not one of your Earth hours. Because, I mean, man, when they did that back in the early seasons, you just sound stupid saying it. But
as you Earthmen say, I'm all ears.
Yes. But I often wonder with these borders, like, okay, correct me if I'm wrong, but space is three-dimensional. But every map I've seen of... like a border between two races, it's like this line. It's like, so is it just like, can you just not fly up? You know, is it just like this weird access in space? Like, you'd think it'd be more like of this amorphous blob of territories, you know. I don't know. It's just, and maybe it's just the technology of the day, but I wish they kind of had been able to represent the overlap of their borders, you know, a little bit more realistically.
Look how smug Picard looks here when he's kind of rubbing it into the Admiral. He's like, "Oh, really? This is what you think happened? Do you think they just picked it up on sensors? Well, guess what? No one."
It's like he's wearing a wire, and he's just guiding him. Yeah. You know. Oh, yes, say this, Admiral. Yes. Oh, yes.
I don't think
we should do this.
Yeah, it's great. I
love this. I'm reluctantly going to have to give you an order here, Picard.
Just to confirm what I heard you say, you said you ordered me in writing to do this. Wink, wink.
Just speaking to this potted plant.
Yeah, let me just lean forward a little bit here. Go ahead and repeat what you had to say.
Well, we know Livingston is reporting this whole conversation to Section 31 as we speak.
That's exactly right. Look at him. He's right there in the background right now. You can just... Yeah. Oh, there he is. Just over his ear, you can see him.
Two bubbles. And you'll see him disappear from the tank. He's in trouble.
Oh, Livingston is never in trouble. He's always fine. He's got that tube that goes straight to Cetacean Ops, and he's got Commander Flipper as backup, so...
Oh, yeah. I mean, Commander Flipper can't go to the bridge, but, you know, he if he wanted to, he could totally, like, write a strong essay about... I don't know.
I mean, I think that fishbowl is also an escape pod for Livingston. He just presses it, and it'll just shoot.
It's a sphere, and it just goes...
It just sucks him right out, yeah.
And again, three-dimensional space. Like, why couldn't they just go over the Enterprise? Like, I mean, I'm sorry, but... Oh, it's whatever.
Well, you mean the Cardassians there?
Yeah.
Well, they could have. I think they could have... Well, they couldn't have. The Enterprise would have blown them up. I think it was just, you know, it was a...
Oh, well, I guess the Enterprise has to leave these defenseless Bajorans behind for the Cardassians.
Turn on all sensors on rear cameras.
So, and this is the first.
This is literally moments later. So, like, why didn't he just stay on the line? Like, hey, I'll hold. You do what I tell you. Nope, I got to call back now.
Or they could have just been like, here, let me share my screen with you so you can watch it happen in real time.
Oh, no, it's the, I love how there is a very dramatic irony here where we don't know. Like, we think, oh, my God, all the Bajorans have just been killed by the Cardassians while Starfleet ordered them away. What now?
Why is Picard so apathetic? He doesn't care at all.
Yeah. Oh, he had it in it. He had it up his sleeve the whole time.
And just like you mentioned, Darren, not only do we get the first, example of the Bajoran ships, but I think this is the first, the Galar-class Cardassian ship that we see as well, which is becomes huge, huge and important. So,
oh yeah, that becomes, you know, which would be interesting. What if Federation designed their ships to be shaped like humans, you know? Because I mean, theirs look basically like Cardassians with the neck. Huh. That'd be a really interesting design.
I don't love how Picard here is once again turning the tables on the Admiral, which he does, like, you know, every 12 episodes.
Leads
here.
Them from A to B to C. Now, yeah, basically, well, like, follow me.
Yeah, you may have, like, 5 more pips than me, Admiral, but I'm the Picard. You may have heard me. I'm kind of a big deal. So let me tell you what's going on.
I went toe-toe to the Borg and took them out.
I met the
man. Can you imagine, like, his resume? It just, man, that's just.
Oh wow.
Yes. So he's, yeah, just he's like whether it's the... he's calling out the Admiral at this point. Just calling his bluff. Like, hey, we didn't do what you wanted us to do. We can see exactly what your plan was. And the Bajoran problem the for
Admiral, why couldn't you see that?
And Admiral, you fell for it. The Cardassians played you like a flute, which I also play. I'll show you later.
Like a Sarkazian flute, because it can't just be a flute. It's got to be like some random species we've never heard of.
Yes.
Plus that object
that only exists in your mind because you lived that lifetime.
Yeah.
So okay, we get this wonderfully touching scene between Ro and Captain Picard at the end, where essentially he asks her to join the crew, and she's reluctant at first, obviously, but she eventually says yes, as long as she can wear her Bajoran earring, which is cutesy, I guess. But this is nice because Ro definitely looks up to Picard. Like, I think we can all agree on that. Ro, like, sees him as a father figure, and we'll see this play through all the way until the season 7 episode where she defects. I can't believe I forgot the name again. Preemptive strike. And so in the 7 or 8 or 9 or 10 episodes that she's in, her relationship with Picard is essential to her character. And even in the last episode when she decides to leave Starfleet for the Maquis, we see that it really takes a toll on her what Picard thinks about her. And this is the genesis of that. And I think it's wonderful.
It's a great arc.
Yeah, I mean, I think Ro is almost, and maybe I'm wrong, but is almost one of those first characters where you have that sort of, you know, teacher-student relationship. Because, in other words, I'm thinking of, like, Voyager, where you had Seven, who was Janeway's project, you know, who was shaping her, and Kes to a certain extent. But here you have them setting up that Ro's going to be Picard's project, that he's going to, you know, mold her, shape her, make her a better leader, and at the same time, she'll also have an effect on him. Because, hey, guess what? I'm putting my earring on. Deal with it.
Well, and I think that's why she's also such good friends with Guinan. I mean, the paperwork she had to do for that earring is nothing compared to the paperwork Guinan had to do for her hats. I mean, mountains and mountains of paperwork.
And she's not even in Starfleet.
And she's not even... she just runs the local drinking establishment.
The end.
And okay, so that was the end of the episode. And, you know, that brings us to close to the end here, but I did want to go into just some closing thoughts of what you guys think about the episode. I'll let you go first, Darren. Darren, what are your opinions of Ensign Ro? How do you feel about it as an episode?
I think it's a great episode. It's all the times I've watched it this last week in kind of preparation for this discussion, I think the greatest thing is not even Ensign Ro, is more of what we discussed with the Cardassians, with really starting to sow those seeds and I think that was greatly to the benefit of Deep Space Nine, because you have that's basically the main antagonist for the first few seasons. And as many times as they pulled away Gul Dukat, he always just showed up to be a thorn in Sisko's side. Like, he was such a reoccurring villain, but in a very villainous way, different than Q. I mean, Q kept showing up, but, you know, he was the trickster. You know, Dukat was the monster. And this really set up the Cardassians in such a great way that really, I think, really benefited Deep Space Nine. And, you know, we got a great character out of it that was really well used, I think, in her stint in the remainder of Next Gen. And unfortunately, that didn't continue into Deep Space Nine. Miles kind of took her seat on the shuttle.
Great. Yeah, no, those were really good points. What about you, Philip? How do you feel about it?
Well, I mean, Daniel, I like this episode too, which I think it's interesting that we're, what season is this? Season six?
Five.
Here?
That five.
We're
introducing. Season five.
But we're introducing a new character. I mean, that, you know, hey, we're going to have this new character. She's going to be on.
Who introduces a new character in their fifth season? I mean, come on.
I know. Well, I mean, you know, and so I think it's kind of an interesting way that TNG was trying to, you know, keep things fresh and keep things going, and certainly she was a change from people that we've seen before. You know, introduced a new alien species, and like I said, that sort of unique perspective of Bajorans, which again, I think this is an interesting episode, especially for me in the way that I approach my Trek fandom, which is, you know, through the morality and the principles of Starfleet, you know, with Picard, because you see at the end with Picard saying, you know, hey, Ensign Ro, you have a lot to learn from Starfleet. And yet it's the same Starfleet that ignored her people, allowed them to be oppressed, that has this crazy admiral who's making side deals with Cardassians. Yet, just like Picard, I believe in the principles of the Federation and Starfleet. Unfortunately, some of the people in Federation and Starfleet don't always live that. But I think it's interesting in setting up all those sort of balls of what we said, the Cardassians, the Bajorans, the Enterprise, and this character of Ensign Ro going forward. And I think she did have a lot of good episodes. I think there's some times where she was just sort of the token, you know, Worf substitute sometimes, you know, just the angry fire phasers at everything. But there were other episodes too where she did provide a great presence, whether it was Rascals or I'm blanking on the name, the one with Geordi, where they were both, you know, quote unquote dead.
Out of phase?
I think it's out of phase, yeah.
Yeah. But anyway, she definitely did a great job, and I was sort of sad to see her defect at the end, but, you know, it certainly wasn't a crazy storyline and made sense. So good episode.
Yeah, and I agree with both of you guys. Ensign Ro, this episode as a whole is I think the most important episode in setting up Deep Space Nine. And this isn't the Deep Space Nine podcast, so we're not going to talk too much about that, but it's interesting that in this
it has
episode,
a name.
It's called the Orb. The Orb. Oh wait, no, we don't say it for that one.
Anyways, it's interesting that in this episode that sets up so many essential things to Deep Space Nine. Obviously, the Cardassian Bajoran conflict and all of that kind of lays the groundwork for it. Even though I don't think they were meaning to at the time, that's just kind of what came out of it. We get a character like Ensign Ro, who is kind of more Deep Space Nine-esque than TNG-esque. That we get this flawed character that doesn't want to be in Starfleet, that doesn't get along with Starfleet, that kind of wants to do her own thing, but then learns from her experience with Starfleet and grows as a character. And I think that's wonderful. I think I have nothing but good things to say about Ensign Ro. I love every episode she's in. I love every appearance of her. I wish she was in Deep Space Nine. I wish she showed up in the movies at some point. I even loved her when she showed up, Ensign Ro, as Admiral Ro in Battlestar Galactica. But you know, she had gone through some rough times, so things didn't work out so well for
did
her.
You watch season two of True Blood?
Is she was a bad admiral. That's absolutely right. And yes, I have seen some of her appearances on True Blood, but that's not important. So I do. I love Ensign Ro, and I love watching these episodes with her. And it makes me sad because I do wish that we got to see a little more of her character. But I am glad they took the risk, because it was a risk introducing a new character in season five, like Philip mentioned, and I'm just glad that they did that. So, but I mean, it's been great talking about Ensign Ro and the Cardassians and the Bajora. as we've been doing today. But these are not the only subjects that we've been talking about on Trek FM this week. So here's a quick look at what you may have missed elsewhere on the network.
Previously on Trek.fm, Standard Orbit.
Gene Roddenberry.
I appreciate Gene Roddenberry as a creator because he had a vision and he stuck to it, unlike other creators of other franchises that we won't get into.
Who are you talking about, Drew?
Not George Lucas.
Earl Grey.
Romance on TNG.
I got the four pips. I'm ready to settle down now. It wasn't until then that I could get stay with one woman.
So instead of rings, do they use that last pip on his collar as the signal of their eternal love and devotion together?
The orb.
Bajoran prophecies.
Well, you know, I was thinking that Horan was probably not so much a prophet as a Bajoran songwriter who just wrote really bad lyrics.
The ready room.
Faces.
What you brought up is the exact reason why I like this episode so much, because the essential message is we have to have our good and our not so hot qualities to make us who we are. We have to deal with them. And this is just a very extreme version of that.
To the journey!
Workforce rewrite.
And I'm totally with you about Jaffin. He is like Mark version 2.0. He's just like, he's a little too laid back. He's a little too quick to buy into all of this. Mm-hmm. And I just, yeah, dude, grow a pair. I like the way you put that.
Commentary, Trek Stars.
Black and Cushman, part two.
So they were trying to find a replacement, not to play Spock, but to play another Vulcan who would be assigned to the Enterprise.
Whoa.
And one of the guys they were considering was David Carradine, who went on to play.
Oh, my God.
Warp 5.
Continuity and consequences.
It was a place that you generally don't expect Star Trek to go with a major character for sure, and certainly not for the period of time that it went on, because, you know, it starts in Fusion. She becomes infected with this Panar syndrome, and then that even leads her to drug addiction.
Trek News and Views.
Looking back at TNP.
Oh, okay, we're still talking TMP. I was thinking Janeway's pink nighty.
I know, I was like, what?
Oh, Janeway's pink nighty, OBQ.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You seem to like it.
Yeah, done before, yeah. That was a nice nighty.
Literary Treks.
Bill Wynn.
It has two sides to it. You know, you can read it as just the fun yacht race, which I thought, the Federation has a biannual sailing competition? I did not know this.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
So check out these shows and get in on the daily Trek Talk. You'll find them everywhere on the internet you possibly can. iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn, Windows Phone, Xbox Zune. You can stream and download the files directly from the website. So all you have to do is visit trek.fm/pd for the podcast directory to get all of the links. So if you want to contact us, you can do that. All you have to do is go to trek.fm/contact. There's a form there and you can choose to send to Earl Grey. That will come to the three of us by email. And you can also use the tab on the right-hand side of any page to send us a voicemail using your webcam's microphone. And you can also use the Trek.fm/forums and use social media as well at Facebook at facebook.com/Trek.fm or on Twitter under the username Trek.fm.
Before we go, we'd like to ask you to please support our sponsor, who makes it possible for us to bring every cup of Earl Grey to you, as well as all of our other shows. Our sponsor for this show is Audible.com. Audible is a great way for you to read all of the books you've ever wanted to read but never thought you had the time for. Audible is the premier source for audiobooks, with more than 150,000 titles to choose from, and new titles coming every week. From classics to current bestsellers, Audible has something for everyone. There are many next-generation books available on Audible, including Dark Mirror and Q-Squared, both read by Q himself, John Delancey. As a Trek FM listener, you can get a free audiobook of your choice along with a 30-day trial just to see how great Audible is. So give it a try today. Catch up on all those classic books you've yet to read or that latest novel from your favorite author as well. Just go to audibletrial.com/trekfm and sign up today. Again, that is audibletrial.com/trekfm. And we thank you and Audible for supporting Earl Grey and Trek FM.
All right, Darren, if people are looking for you on the internet, where can they find you?
Well, they can go to drscifi.com for my podcast and my very sporadic blog, or they can talk to me directly on Twitter at drscifi.
Great. And how about you, Philip?
Well, they can find me at my Twitter handle, Ensign Rowe, for my show, Ensign Rowe. Where, no. They can find me on Twitter. My handle is NC Public Servant. That's NC like North Carolina, where I talk about Trek, Doctor Who, politics, government, and whatever else is going on in the world.
Great. And if anybody wants to find me, Twitter would be the best place. I am 1UpDan. That is the number, not the word one. All right, guys. Well, even though scissor technology has not changed in 300 years, I need to get down to Mott's for a trim, I think. And maybe even a shave. It's No Shave November, so maybe he can make me look like Riker. But so we will catch you guys next week on Earl Grey and Gage.
Make it so.
Live long and prosper.
Fire.